You are listening to In Response, a legacy podcast. A show where three handsome guys talk about their favorite Magic the Gathering format, Legacy. This show is brought to you by QueerNessAtAnyCost.com and Austrian-Legacy.com. You can support the show at patreon.com/response_legacy. And now, lean back and enjoy.
Hello everyone and welcome to episode 60
50 Shades of Legacy
of
In Response,
a legacy podcast.
I'm Philipp Klein.
I am Daniel.
And I'm Peter Plank.
And we're talking about legacy
most of the time. So, hello guys. I'm now rejoined in Austria after traveling far, far and long away to Berlin, visiting a friend of the podcast, Kai Savatari. But do you know what is really exciting about Germany?
I guess many things. I would say the Oktoberfest, maybe.
Probably, or I don't know. I mean, in Munich, there's good beer.
You have 6 weeks of vacation.
Oh, really? Wow.
Yeah.
But the real special thing there is riding the train, because the Germans enjoy this so much that they basically delay every single train that you can travel a much longer time in there. So it's like a really, really nice thing.
We have Monday today. I'm surprised that you're still
that you're already here. Yeah.
I mean, there were some moments that were incredibly shitty, but the good thing is when you arrive at another train station, that you can catch the following train because it's also delayed, so that you can arrive at least at
the final destination. Everything works out. That's part of the plan. Yeah. Am I right?
Yeah. Yeah. Ah, they delay just everything, so everything is fine, kind of. Ah,
this falls into place.
Yeah, I like this.
It was incredible. One side note, Switzerland does prohibit German trains traveling to the Swiss system because they're always delayed and fuck up that Swiss plan. So
I can see that.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, on a side note, I was in Berlin. I got to know Kai Savatari a little bit, our artist, food connoisseur, master chef, streamer, and podcaster. And yeah, had an incredible time out there.
Really amazing. I have to say, I'm really jealous to a little extent because I could not join you.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
I mean, father duties.
You had duties. Yeah. I had just a sickness. I would have liked to join, but yeah, on the other hand, this story of the Deutsche Bahn was not something that I would really look forward to.
Yeah, I already told Daniel beforehand that I was a little bit... I was jealous of you because you get to drive to Berlin and was sure a hell of a party and everything was awesome. But then I saw your rant on Twitter and I felt like I felt this big relief on my soul and was like, oh, well, at least I didn't have to endure this whole journey.
Yeah, the traveling was insane, but up there it was like really, really chill. We did some shootings together with Kai and a few of his friends.
Some shootings?
Yeah.
What kind of shootings?
What? A video shooting.
Tequila shoots. Tequila shots. I think this was tequila shots.
Ah, okay. This kind of shooting. Yeah.
No, we did a video shoot for a future ad for his tokens. So we made some gameplay and got to show some vibes, how it is like in a local community. Was awesome. Then an incredible party. I went home at like 2 in the night because I was like really exhausted from the whole traveling of the day. Mm-hmm. But it went on upwards to like 5 in the morning. And yeah, on the next day, met up again with Kai. So we had small chitty chatty. And yeah, then on the same day, back home to Vienna. To Lenz.
To Vienna. Since when are you from Vienna? I mean,
yeah,
what the fuck?
Because the last train was up to Vienna, and I really had to chase that one too, because the home train was also delayed a little
bit. Okay, okay. And I don't think you mentioned it, but this was actually a birthday party for Kai, yeah?
It was his...
The boy turned 32.
Yeah, exactly.
So happy birthday, Kai Sawatari, from... Yeah, the rest of the response, guys.
Yes.
So,
yep, congrats. Yeah. And yeah, up to 32, at least 32 more years, that's for sure. As you say.
Yeah.
That's exactly the age that you... usually stop working and get into retirement. So hopefully he lives his days when he works and pays for the system, and then whatever.
Then it's fine.
I mean, that's a very, very German way to look at it. Very pragmatic.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, this idea of doing a birthday party like that seems really cool. I think maybe we can do something like that. Also in the future
for the podcast
and make something like an in response
birthday open
not the gathering but the drinking
in response a shooting birthday shooting.
So yeah, at first, oh my god, I lost.
You lost track?
Okay. I lost track.
I was going to say, I don't know, do you have something for Berlin to add?
No, not really.
Okay, because I wanted to say, now we have the exciting news done, let's head over to the unexciting one, which is the band announcement that happened actually today.
I have seen it. Bomas and The Ring got really, really not banned.
Yeah. Nothing. It was just no changes. Yeah. Very unexciting. Even no explanation whatsoever to any format. It was just...
I mean, it was pretty expected, to be honest. Yeah. At least from my side. Because like the meta adjusted and stuff like that. And Legacy looks as open as it gets.
Yeah, and that's actually something I didn't really expect beforehand. Because Bowmaster and Ring...
It looked...
Seemed so... I don't want to say oppressive, but they seem really strong. And on paper, it was like, oh, you have to play Bowmaster and it's just so good. And The Ring, and it's just so good. And everything just falls back into these categories. And now suddenly, dust has settled. Everything is great. I mean, what are we for? We are a Legacy podcast and we aren't ranting about Legacy. What the hell is happening?
I think this is a very special moment in during all Legacy history, because we have now a period that is actually really good and fine. And yeah, for I think especially Bowmaster was something that looked really outrageous on paper when it got spoiled, but now it really comes to effect that this card as a design really
it ebbs and flows.
Well, no, I want to say...
What do you want to say?
When you have a look at those fire design cards that are just so oppressive and got banned in the recent history of Legacy, we always have proactive threats that win the game whenever they live one turn or so. But Bowmaster is a reactive card that is actually an answer, not really a threat. And... this play pattern that the second Bowmaster beat the first Bowmaster means so that when you have when you play it proactive and you get to protect it, you're not automatically winning the game.
Yeah, that's true.
And I think this is one effect that makes Bowmaster not so oppressive in the end, and just a very strong tool like any card. I would view it a card like Brainstorm. It is format defining, format important in that sense, because it's so powerful but not oppressive, and also not really oppressing strategies too much. I mean, it affects strategies and people have to adapt a little bit, but it's still two mana for ping one at the worst case.
Most of the time it doesn't really do more. I mean, yeah, your opponent doesn't play any ponder anymore and brainstorms until they have found answer naturally or something, but that's just the best that it gets. You don't get to snag a brainstorm all the time.
And what I really like is also when you look at the other cards that are being popular, like Up the Beanstalk, for example, we talked about this extensively in the last episode. And when you have a look at all the other best decks in the format or well-performing decks, drawing a card in Legacy is still one of the most important or best thing you can do. Bowmaster doesn't change that.
For sure. And what I really found interesting is like I said, Bowmaster ebbs and flows. And at the moment, we really have a low point in Bowmaster. At first, when they put it into MTGO, I think over 50% of all decks played Bowmaster. And it was so extreme that it even got played more than Brainstorm and Force of Will. And there were more copies than Brainstorm and Force of Will of Bowmaster in the Legacy decks. And now Bowmaster is about 36% of the most played cards. And that's actually a huge downswing.
It's fine.
Yeah, one of the things that previously Daniel mentioned is like it's kind of a self-regulating card because like it beats itself. Black is not really good versus black because of like Snuffout, for example. So it's a really, really good design thing that it is actually a black card that kills itself. Mm-hmm. So I don't think that Bowmasters will ever get too oppressive because like you play the Bowmaster, it's a self answer, but it's not so oppressive versus every strategy as like how was Metal Mystic Boss, basically.
Yeah.
And we see this in a lot of different cards that are being played at the moment. We have the One Ring, we have Up the Beanstalk, we have Fourth Erlingers, then we have even something like Beseeching Mirror, of course. This powered up so many different decks that there's no clear winner or no best strategy at the moment. So you can play Control, you can play Delver. We have seen, I think, even three different versions of Delver at the moment. Two kind of rock Delvers, one is Beanstalk, which is more or less a mid-range version.
I think there are even four to five Delver flavors now at the moment.
Maybe, I didn't see it, but it could be, I counted two rock decks and blue-red straight up, but maybe there's a Grixis Delver also.
Yeah, Grixis Delver for sure,
yeah.
And in theory, there is, in paper, the Bant version with Beanstalk, because St. Catherine is still not legal.
Well, this is kind of a mid-range deck, right?
It leads more into the mid-range.
Yeah.
But so the format is pretty wide open. That's why we're talking today about a very open format, and basically everything is possible. So these are the 50 Shades of Legacy. And before we hop into the episode, we'd like to thank our sponsors, our Patreons, Matt Duncan, Christian Neutz, and Moritz. Thank you for your support, and if you want to join us on Patreon, it's patreon.com/response_legacy.
Exactly, and because we are talking about the open format, the format where every shade is playable, some small numbers from MTG Top 8. According to their system, there is currently 34% combo, which is basically a third of the format, and we have 47% aggro and 19% control, according to them. Which means like we had a small downshift of the playability of control, I would say, but it's mostly also reflected in online numbers because like if you're a really good control player, control is still one of the best things you can do in Legacy.
Especially in paper.
Yeah.
And a lot of events are more based on control decks, I would say. I mean, it's kind of even, but I think control really shines for paper players. I at least have the feeling, maybe you see it differently, but I'm mostly looking, for example, at this Italian community. For example,
Shmuley from Israel.
Yeah.
For example.
Or Vicky, who is it called?
Andre.
Angelo Candea, for example, And these players really love a control deck, and Beanstalk is pretty big. I even saw now today a version from Angelo, four color control kind of. Oh, was it? I think so. With Questing Druid. Instead of Bob the Beanstalk. I saw a list. I don't know if it was Angelo.
No, it was from think it was Niccolo Cavoni's list.
No, it was not Niccolo, but it was a, I don't know who. Yeah. But it was not playing Beanstalk, but just questing Druist. Mm-hmm. I think the baseline was this four-color control deck with expressive iteration, yeah, iteration in the past, mm-hmm. and just swapped with questing Druid. So kind of this strategy also looks kind of nice because questing Druid is kind of the expressive iteration slot
and also a threat.
Kind of also a threat, even though not so but reliable. But it's okay.
It can't, if it's a threat, it can't be pyroblasted. So
yeah. I mean, it's valuable.
One thing that I really like about questing Druid currently is it's like such a cool design, mm-hmm. as a 3-for-1.
Yeah.
It's like you get two cards of the adventure, yeah. and one card as the questing
kind
Druid
of,
itself.
Kind of 3-for-1, so yeah.
Basically a 3-for-1. If you think about this card as of a draw 3, it's like really good.
For sure.
Yeah, I mean, the play pattern are very distinct because, like, you get the questing Druid, like, 7 turns later if you want to. But the other cards you have to pay on the next turn, most likely. But, yeah, it's such a good design.
And I think there has been some discussion going on when you cast this card at the end of your opponent's end step. What will actually happen?
No, if you cast it on your own end step.
I guess it doesn't matter because it just says until the next end step, right?
True.
Yeah. But yeah, if you cast it...
End of turn.
If you just cast it end of turn, what will happen, yeah? And I think the wording is somewhat not really...
Coherent.
Not it's coherent, but it's just shortened a little bit.
Yeah, so it's not really clear.
Normally it says at the beginning of the end step, but here it says during or until the end step, or until end of turn or so. And until your next end step, yeah. It doesn't clarify if it's at the beginning or kind of during, but there is no during. So it actually counts as at the beginning. So if you cast it during your end step, it will last one extra turn, those two cards. So it actually means the card is better than,
that people initially thought.
Yeah. It could be the other way around and it would not be so good because... You may want to cast this end of turn so that you have the mana for your own turn to cast your spells. So this can be done.
But yeah, I think we talked about it in the last episode. Peter, you brought it up. And I totally missed the fact that it's not a Reckless Impulse, because Reckless Impulse is sorcery speed and this is instant. So in my opinion, this questing Druid, this card is bonkers. It's so insane. It's just slapping Reckless Impulse onto an instant card would make it certainly playable in and of itself.
Yeah.
And then it's also on a body or an adventure card like the Druid. I mean, it's just a 1/1 that can grow.
It is something that you can, at the end, later stages of the game, you can spend your mana for having... Another threat, yeah.
It's like, you get the questing Druid, then you sort your opponent's threat, then you brainstorm or you ponder, and suddenly it's a 3-3 or a 4-4.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And wow, it just seems really good. And
yeah,
I think have to get my place.
I mean, it's not expressive iteration, that's for sure.
It's but different, yeah.
Because I think one big downside is, of course, you can Mystic Sanctuary it. It's not possible.
The loops aren't possible.
The loops, you cannot really go full crazy mode with that. Unless you have, what is this called? This blue mage.
Lyra.
Lyra, yeah. I don't know if we have we talked about this interaction on the podcast. Yeah,
we haven't talked about it, but...
It is crazy, yeah. But because usually all the adventures are creatures when they are not on the stack. So in the graveyard, it is a creature.
Yeah.
But Lyra says, I think all cards in your... Or you can cast instant and sorcery spells from your graveyard.
Yeah.
Kind of. So it has a continuous effect that is going on. And because it is continuous, how you would do that, you would cast a spell, you put it onto the stack, and then it checks whether it's legal or not to so that it is able to be cast and put on the stack. And then when it's already on the stack, it sees an instant, and then it's fine. So you completely kind of disregard this, that this is a creature, because you can actually flashback it, for example, from
So, questing Lyra control when?
Yeah, it's, I think, a 4-drop or so. It is.
It's a 5-drop.
Okay, five, so it's unplayable.
Not really. Yeah, legacy level. 4-drop is even also not so.
Yeah.
Yeah, 4-drop has to win the game. I mean, a 3-drop now has to win the game.
Yes. I mean, one big thing of the play patterns with the questing druid is like, you don't really have to cast the druids up front, and you may even cast the reckless impulse half late in the games, which makes the deck really, really strong in the mid to late game. And one thing is, like, if you are thinking about traditional beliefs of the Delver strategies, we have like blue red, which was the really fast deck. We have like Grixis that basically preys on all the combo decks because of discard and stuff like that. And we had like Ruk, which was traditionally a little bit of the slower of the Delver decks.
It was more the tempo deck, the real tempo deck, yeah.
Back in the days with
Canadian Fresh.
Canadian Fresh. But if we go a little bit further into history, like 2019 days, it was always the deck that the grinded with. Basically, we banned Ren and Six, then we played Sylvan Library and stuff like that. So this is the version of Delver that has the card advantage. Mm. And I really think of the Questing Druid in a Sylvan Library slot.
Mm. Yeah.
It's the thing that gives you a continuous card advantage, makes a body, and it's really cool that we have kind of the triangle of Delver nowadays again.
Yeah. That's also one thing I really like about this card. And for our listeners that are hearing us for a long time, I am one of the big I like it when Delver has to go into three colors to be viable, and I really love it if there are more flavors of Delver. Mm. So if you got Grixis, if you got blue red, if you got Ruk, and hell, it would be great to have Bug Delver also. But
long time, you could do something. You could combine Beanstalk and Bowmaster maybe, but maybe it's too much.
You can hard to cast an 8 mana flying dude.
You mean
Tombstalker? Yeah, Tombstalker. Tombstalker. This was part of Team America. This was the Team America deck, the Bug Delver
but
with Tombstalker.
But is the better Tombstalker.
Yeah, obviously. But
yeah,
back in the day.
You could play Murderous Cut, which is Delve, which also draws a card with Beanstalk. I mean, there would be ways to abuse up the Beanstalk in the Bug, the very, very mid-rangey Bug Delver list.
Yeah, but you kind of need to have so much stuff in the graveyard.
The thing is that Dragonrage, losing Dragonrage Chandler hurts so much. It's a problem, I think.
Yeah.
It's one of it's the better Delver.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. You would certainly lose a lot
because
of tempo.
These Ruk decks, they don't necessarily play all Delvers, right?
I think it's two or three.
Also none, if there's more mid-rangey, I would say. I think this Up the Beanstalk version has no Delver, I think. Unless I'm mistaken.
Up the Beanstalk definitely plays no Delvers.
So this is a lot of things you can do with that direction.
Yeah.
And we mentioned Hooting Mandrills. And I really like that these old kind of cards kind of shine again a little bit, even though they're not super, super strong. But I like that this during these times in 2023, we have these kind of cards that completely, they were very strong in the past. But now you're thinking, okay, what is this card doing here? We have 2023, come on.
And suddenly the card is good because it just draws a card.
It's just attached. But what goes into this direction, I think, is something like Old Breakfast. Well, Old Breakfast is, for example, really strong again. And you know what changed?
Bowmasters.
Bowmasters was here. And before Bowmasters was printed and before Stuff was printed, there was a standard Breakfast version with Stoneforge Mystic.
Yeah.
Not a single card has changed, and we have made two legacy top eights in the challenges.
Oh really?
With such a list.
With this old Stoneforge list.
No card is different. It's the same 75 basically.
Okay, but what? Okay, I mean, I can see it because you have card advantage of Stoneforge Mystic. You get the Caldras.
Yeah.
It doesn't get hit. Stoneforge Mystic doesn't get hit by Bowmaster.
And suddenly it's okay. Man, it's not oppressive as it was in the past. It was probably stronger than in the past. But in the past it was stronger. But right now, I'm surprised. I saw it. If you had a look at the last two challenges, we have one, I think, first place and then one second place or so.
Oh, wow.
It was the same guy, I think, but Stoneforge version, yeah. And then Lorenzo Donati also made top eight of, I think, the Bot Drop series with the same list, kind of.
Yeah, shout out to the Law League here, to our Italian friends. I mean, they were traveling to Bottrop series from Italy. They called it the invasion of Germany.
Yeah. And then Lorenzo was messaging me and said something like, Austria is next. So it's coming for us.
Oh, yeah.
We will welcome them.
It's really amazing. And what I wanted to show you is something that I got from one other fellow colleague. This was really, really nice. There was a last couple of events in Germany where Peter Venters was attending.
Okay.
The artist of Cephalid Illusionist. Mm. And my fellow breakfast aficionado friend, Severin Schwarzhuber, he was attending the event and he got me a playset of nice Illusionists that I can show you.
Whoa!
Of signed Illusionists.
Very beautiful.
Very, very nice. And you know, you can't see it at the moment, but
I will tweet it.
You can see it online. They're very beautiful, I think. I'm always interested in signing. And Severin, shout out to you. Really nice. Very nice that you did this. Thank you so much.
That's really, really nice.
Yeah.
I really get you because signings are probably also my most favorite pimp that you can get.
My most favorite pimp is Old Bordering. But
yeah, old border and then
signing. Yeah.
I can't get
no
both.
Foils, just no foils.
And German.
I specifically asked for English ones.
I know.
But I'm totally here with you, Peter. I'm also all up for German cards. Everything is better than English.
I mean,
not that I can't speak English, but it's just
I'm
more interesting.
The only one of us, yeah.
I mean, if you see it, it's a Goblin Welder or is it a Goblin Schweißermeister? It's
just which is more
easy.
Cool.
This is a lot of people are with you here, and I just can't get behind it.
Or Urza's Saga or Urza's Sagi.
That's almost
wow. What was something that was the wilderne cattle, the wilderne cattle?
What the wilder. Standstill or the still stand?
Yeah.
Okay, so I think we're drifting too far from the main topic here. I'm gonna be the voice of reason right now. So everything is possible. What are you playing, guys?
Well, I didn't play much at the moment because there was not many FNMs that I could attend. The last thing that I played was my Mono Black Besiege deck. And I countered, it is strong, but you know what the burn problem is?
You lose to the top of the deck.
Yeah,
or you draw lands or only spells.
Yeah, you lose to your own deck, kind of. So it is powerful, it is explosive, but when you don't have anything going on, it happens sometimes that you just draw land, ritual, petal, Agadim's Awakening, and then you're just sad.
Yeah, it's a non-blue deck. I mean,
exactly.
I know that feeling because this is basically all my life in Legacy.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think mono black, how many versions are there? I think you have the... Your mono black deck is more the Frantagic Utilist. It's more like mono black Helm, or
is it is actually more a Besiege mid range deck with a toolbox kind of combo inside, and the Helm is something to tutor up with the Besiege. And this is the I think the best version. But you could also go into the direction of more Helms. So that means a playset of Helm in the main deck and a playset of Karn or so. You could go with really black Helm. And you could put in a scam package of Trolls Griefs and Reanimates, for example.
And also maybe going to Mono Black Storm, like Mono Black Saga Storm.
This would be then completely into Storm, yeah.
Yeah, but these are four different flavors here, only in Mono Black. You've got the mid-range Stompy the other flavors, so...
Mm. Although I would separate the Storm deck a little bit because it's really built very differently than the other, because I don't have Leland. I would view all Leland decks in the main as the same kind of version. The Storm decks have most of the time the Leland plus Helm combo in the sideboard, which I think is a good plan to board into, but not in the main deck.
Yeah, I can see this, yeah, for sure. Peter, what are the different flavors of Painter at the moment?
I mean, currently there are three, I would say. I mean,
really?
Mono red, basically, with the light splash for Chaos Defiler.
For white and black. And
then is...
Wait, Mardu? Oh my god.
I mean, basically, I'm playing Mardu. Then is the white version where you have a small splash either with a Badlands or just with the Petals and the Treasure Token from Fable of the Mirror Breaker for Chaos Defiler, and then the Swords to Plowshares in the main deck, and most of the time Aethers on Canonist. And then there is the black version that's still running around with Chaos Defiler and Orcish Bowmasters.
But when you just compare the mono red to, let's say, the mono black, the black version.
Yeah.
Would you say that this mono red is just purely at the moment anymore, or well, is the only reason why it exists at the moment or any more is because of the online metagame, because of Chaos Defiler not being available there? Or would you say if it was, everything was combined, that the mono red version would still be even preferable to some?
It's for a few of the guys, mono red is still the way to go. For example, Julian Njab played it in Bologna.
But you still have one Chaos Defiler, right?
Yeah, but it's like a surgical counting as a black card.
Okay,
because
okay.
You have like three treasures in the main deck.
Okay,
of
okay.
Lotus Petal, you have the Fables. And those decks most of the time don't even play a single Badlands.
Mm.
So it's really mono.
Singleton to search for.
And because you search for it with the engineer and put it into play with the welder. Mm. So it's just a thing. And yeah, the card has so much utility. It's really, really incredibly hard that it is not online. And if you're talking about, I don't call it flavors, shades of Painter. There is
beautiful. I like it.
There is also the thing, in each of those three decks, you can play with or without Khan. Mm. And Khan changes up quite a few things, because it's like more mana dependent, it's a late game killer, it has some play, especially in a meta game where you expect a lot of like besiege decks and stuff like that, because they need the artifacts to fuel. So it has some incredible utility. I, for my hand, I play way too little Legacy at the moment. I am sticking to my list in from Bologna, because I know the deck, even though I changed the color just before the tournament. The play patterns are the same for me since like the last half year. So it's like really, really strong core that you can do a lot of stuff with. Mm-hmm. And yeah, Painter is incredibly good. And I don't think if Chaos Defiler is online, we would see any change-ups, because like the small flavors are... or shades are still there and have still strengths and weaknesses.
Agree.
Like it should be. I mean,
yeah.
That's what I really like about the meta at the moment.
Yeah, but what shit pile are you playing, Philip?
Actually, I wanted to talk a little bit more about Storm here.
Yeah.
Because...
I also love to talk about Storm.
Yeah, because we didn't have switched to this kind of combo right now. And I wanted to hook into the besiege kind of talk. Yeah. There are a lot of besiege or a lot of storm combo decks at the moment.
Yeah.
And not a real. There is not a real winner or tier one list or the best list at the moment. So every one of those has strengths and weaknesses also. But what I really like for myself is the. I think it's straight green and black.
There's a Golgari version, yeah.
Besiege
is. Is it the one Storm? That was first played by the Epic Storm, Brian Cook?
Probably. I mean, I've seen it on Twitter, and I'm unsure who tweeted it.
It has, I think, two guys.
Two Gaia's Will, four Beseech, one...
In the place of Veil of Summer.
Two the two Wishclaw Talisman.
Veil of Summer.
Veil of Summer.
Yeah, it's pretty much the version that Brian Cook played a couple of days after Beseech was out, I think. There's really an early video, and looks really clean and nice. Absolutely a strong kind of adaption of this mono black storm because it has Saga also, so mono Saga Storm.
It's also Saga.
Saga Storm with green splash also, kind of, so to say, a little bit.
Yeah, one thing is like with Beseech is like the package you need for the win is like so slim.
And that's what I really like here.
And the resources during the game also, it is you need so little.
Four or five mana.
Four mana. It is, if you have a lot of things to sacrifice, you only need four mana.
Yeah.
Because you can Beseech everything else.
Two artifacts, two rituals, and the Beseech.
For example, there's a lot of different lines here. There's a lot of
If you have protection also, then it's even better. But I think that's what you really need, two artifacts, two rituals, and a Beseech.
It reduces a lot of pressure for Storm. Because it is a critical mass deck and you needed to gather so much resources, which costs so much time in building your deck, that you're just not competing with what your opponent is doing. And then suddenly you have Deafening Silence and Thalia and whatnot. And then you have to deal with so many. Then you're actually... your resources are needed to deal with the permanence rather than build up your own resources, and then in the end you still die. So this is devastating.
That,
in the past.
That was the Storm experience from the last past years. Yes. Am I right?
Yes. I had this a long time, when either you're overboarding to the answers, kind of, but then you're only dealing with stuff and you're not advancing. Or you try to go for something quick and then you are overblown because you cannot deal with the answers.
Yeah, then you don't find the Abrupt Decay or the Witherbloom Command or something, and you simply can't deal with the Deafening Silence or the Thalia, and it's just game over. Yeah. And suddenly with Beseech, the lines are getting so clean.
Yeah.
The only thing, I think Brian Cook said it in his podcast, was like he doesn't like the S4 Told.
He also checks
at first play, and he said playing two Gaea's Will is probably simply better, and I totally agree here. And Gaea's Will is, I don't think it's dead. If you draw the second one, you can still just suspend it.
And anyways, I think what is really critical for a good Storm deck is that you have a good plan for non-Gaea's Will lines. You need to have those, because Grave of Hate will be then something that people will attack you with. And if you face a Leyland, for example, and if you build your deck around only Gaea's Will, then you have a problem. And I don't think this will construct in a good Storm deck. So you either have to have Saga as a plan B, or Ad Nauseam still, or Empty.
Empty.
Or just, I mean, Beseech is strong enough so they can naturally toot the chain and cast Beseech into Beseech and all these kind of things, and also go through if that also works.
Yeah.
So it's
pretty hard, but actually if you just go a little bit of a tutor chain and have 5 to 6 Storm Count, just go for Empty, it's most of the time it's enough.
Also, I mean, Empty I think is still a little bit fragile, because you need to have a little critical mass sometimes, and if you're facing a lot of blockers, a Bowmaster adds 2, for example, and pings 1. So it deals with 3 tokens almost, kind of.
Yeah, that's true, and that's why I still love Goblin War Strike.
It's like the extra punch.
It was great. I'm a huge Goblin War Strike aficionado.
It's okay. But what I like is this other version that is actually more control deck and has a Storm finish, similar to the Peer into the Abyss Storm, actually.
The new one from Marcus Ewald?
Well, it's from Chex.
From Chex, but Marcus Ewald played it in a challenge. Yeah.
It is kind of the Ring Storm or whatever you would call it. It is minimum Storm package, only rituals, Dark Rituals and Cabal Rituals and Petals, it's only mana and Beseeches. And... then you have Blizzard of the Ring, you have Blizzard of Force of Will.
And Dresdon.
A Blizzard of Dresdon in the main deck.
Yeah, because Dresdon is incredible combined with Besiege.
Yeah.
It's really, really good.
And it just works out so nicely because oftentimes you don't have enough resources, but you just besiege for a ring. And then if you have the ring for two or three turns, you draw so many cards that you can storm off with that through that. And you don't often need a Chaos Will
To win.
To win, in that sense, And
Your Force Protection.
Force Protection is really strong. Against control, you can naturally swap out the four dress downs with the four carpets in the sideboard, for example. You have a green splash also.
But I gotta admit, from my experience with Pianta the Apis Storm, the dress down is probably one of the best cards in the deck because it's like if you're facing down Death and Taxes or
it shuts off all the creatures
or something. It's like, dress down, end of turn, and I just kill you in my turn. It's so insane.
So good, The only thing in action that maybe we can discuss it here. How would you say it? Does this work? I guess it would work because, for example, if your opponent has a Garruk Teeg on the battlefield and you go end of turn dress down, and then on my turn, I want to cast Besiege and sacrificing the dress down. Can I cast the Besiege? I would say yes.
You can cast the Besiege,
but not
because
the
bargain. The bargain.
It's part of the cost.
It's part of the
cost. But then that's on a stack.
But it's an additional cost that you may pay.
It's so part of resolving, or it's part of casting the spell, I would say.
Yeah, I think you you hop over that you can't play it.
I would also
because
say,
it's also already on the stack.
I guess no.
You guess no? I don't know how this is. I think and you need to know the order how casting a spell works because it could be that it is checked after the Dresdon is has left the battlefield, then you could not cast it, I guess. And
I think it's the same with Lyra.
Yeah, you put it onto the stack.
No, it's a different one, I think.
Because, like, when you put it on the stack,
it checks
if it's
legal.
And then it says it's not legal.
And then it could, it might be that this is a problem. Because if it does not work, this is something, of course, this would not be great for the deck. It would be very nice if you would face a Thalia or so, and you can then end of turn dress down, but then you go over the restriction and still have the bargain for it, you know? It would be very nice if it works that way.
So we will make a question in Spotify if you know the answer. Please answer it on our podcast.
I thought about this.
Is it on Spotify? Yeah, it's in Spotify also, for sure.
I think this would be a very nice question to debate, and because we're not judges, and maybe one of our fellow listeners is a judge or knows the rules quite well.
Sure, that would be great.
It would be very nice to know what if this would be possible, for example, this scenario.
Yeah. So, but yeah, it's really incredible timers, especially now. And one thing I want to add on is like,
I mean, we haven't finished yet with shit piles. we haven't talked about shit piles now.
Okay. you wanna tune into the shit piles?
At first, I think there are also a little bit more flavors of blue-black scam or of scam in general.
Oh, really?
So we still have shadow and blue-black scam as shades here, yeah?
The standard two shades, yeah.
The standard two shades. I think in Bologna we had a top 10 finish with Rakdos Shadow, which is basically Rakdos Scam. And I for myself played last Friday the Golgari or the blue-green Smog Scam from...
You mean black-green?
Black-green? Did I say blue-green? Ah, black-green. Black-green Smog Scam. From a challenge, I think 3 weeks ago or something like that, and I had a blast. It was such a fun deck. I can only say, I mean, it went 2-3. It's not that great, but it's so insanely fun having. And the most the best card in this deck was Mausoleum Secrets.
It's so cool.
Oh my god, this card is insane. I don't understand why aren't more blue-black scam player trying out one or two copies of this card. It opens up so much potential.
You know why? Because you can't get Troll of Khazad-dûm and you can't get Murktide Regent. And those are basically the big things. Blue Black Shadow, I can see it playing it.
Yeah.
But Scam, no way. It's just way too.
I mean in this skull, in this green.
I mean, it says black card.
It says black card, yeah. It says black card.
Yeah, then it's kind of restrictive for most of the decks. You kind of want to have Ponder Brainstorm instead of those.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I had a very interesting thing going on because my opponent, my opponent, I wanted to play. I fought season of my opponent. Yeah, that's what the play was, and they brought in opposition agent, and in response I could mausoleum secret dark ritual mausoleum secrets for reanimate on my grief in the in the graveyard. And so I had this great line even though the opposition agent was on a stack, and it was all instant. So mausoleum secrets, I was hooked on this card. Actually, so
it's just one nice card that gets opponents and is bringing some nice flash plays.
Yeah. So basically, what you can do, I mean, yeah, you always have to have Dark Ritual or something. You have to have some fast mana, but getting turn one Troll of Khazad Doom when you have only. Only when you have a little bit of fast mana, a troll and a mausoleum secret, and getting to reanimate the troll in the first turn, it's just a really great flashy play.
Yeah, one thing that's neat with Mausoleum of Secrets is like it's kinda a black cantrip in those decks. It adds a little bit of consistency, even though it's restrictive. That's, I think you also played like the tutor that you can only suspend. Because like this is the card that you can get when you have no graveyard, for example. So it's like a very, very niche card that can do some stuff. But yeah, it's nice to see play.
Yeah. I think that was about the shit piles because of the next deck that I'm be playing this week on Friday is the green blue Up the Beanstalk list from Marco Montani, mm-hmm. with the Submerge and Elvish Reclaimer with Yami Maya combo. I will see how this goes because it's more like a control deck for me, so probably a clean 1-4 or something like that.
A clean one.
That's, a clean 1-4. Yeah.
Because of the buy.
Yeah. You called it.
Yeah, so very, very experimental state for you again.
Yeah, I mean, the meta is really open right now.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You have to.
Great times to play Legacy and try it out.
Yeah.
If you haven't.
And one thing I want to add on is like, it's a great time to be a specialist. If you know your deck, learn all the drills. It's a very, very diverse meta game. You can play everything, yeah. But when you play something,
except Murphoc.
Play it good. Except Murphoc?
I just said
no, I think even Murphoc works.
Okay, then maybe except for Sue.
Even that works. According to MTG.8, even Sue works.
It's okay, 0.1%.
Bogus doesn't work. Never works.
Bogus
it's
wasn't
so it. Good versus Bowmasters, though.
The new hot
well, now we're going
except for Mississippi River.
No, Mississippi River needs a little bit of a more controlling metagame, but it can do some stuff.
I got demolished by Mississippi River last
you can,
Friday.
Obviously. But yeah, you gotta think on average and statistically, yeah.
Well, that's true. I think Mississippi River went 2-3, like yeah. Myself, so
you played even, against Jonas?
Yeah.
Okay.
I even got one game with turn one smog combo, so.
Okay. So, yeah, I think we just can, play.
Yeah, for sure. I think we can wrap this episode up. So if you like what we are doing, consider following us on social media. It's @response_legacy. You can find me on Twitter. I'm FinnekMTG, PHINEKMTG. Peter, where can we find you on social media?
You can read my daily Deutsche Bahn rants on Twitter. It's @UnicornLord, but the O in the Lord is a zero. Where can we find you, Daniel?
Mostly laughing at your rants. You can find me on Twitter. It is @FlyingDelvoir, and yeah, really sad about that, obviously. But yeah, in some weeks we will laugh about it and remember all the great times that you had. That's, I think, more important.
yeah. Thank you. In response, the end.
This was In Response, a Legacy Podcast. If you enjoyed the ride, feel free to support the show by following, leaving a review, or subscribe on patreon.com/response_legacy.